welcome to Living the Gospel of Life. We bring you the latest news and information on life issues to help build up the culture of life. Thank you for listening. I'm Brian Gibson, CEO of Pro-Life Action Ministry.
And I'm Angela Erickson, a board member for Pro-Life Action Ministries and struggling a little bit this morning.
I got
slowly
done with my part.
Sipping my coffee here.
That's it. I got done with my part. You were trying to swallow what you had in your mouth. So it's the fun of doing recording. You can see things like this that none of you listening can see. So hey, we've got our 40 Days for Life Fall campaign is continuing every day. It goes all the way till Sunday, November 2nd. When at 3 p.m. on Sunday, November 2, we will have our closing vigil out at the Mega Planned Parenthood in St. Paul. If you've not been out there, if you've not taken time to stand on the sidewalk and pray, get out there. It is so important. It is so powerful. We know the power of prayer. We know that it has the impact. It saves babies' lives. It helps the women change their minds because it's God who changes their hearts, not us. You know, our prayers are so vital. It keeps us protected from whatever may come, including weather. So get out there and pray. Please get out there and pray. Take the time. We do the vigil hour 6 in the morning till 6 in the evening, daylight time. Well, pretty soon it'll be dark at both edges, but we do that. And so take that time and then pray and fast this whole time. Pray every day, fast in some way that's substantial for you. Our big prayer, and we're asking God for the big thing. So think big. We want Planned Parenthood closed. So pray for it to close. I mean, I'm serious. Really actually ponder that. Think about that. God is able. He could shut this place down, okay? I have full confidence in God. So ask him to close this place down, please. And that's what we're doing for this campaign, this fall campaign. So please do that. Of course, pray for the babies, pray for the moms, the dads, pray for conversion of those that work inside the building, pray for people to leave working there and go find something good to do with their lives, all that stuff. But pray the big prayer that they close, that God closes this place down. So, and then we have our upcoming sidewalk counseling training ministry seminar, Tuesday, October 1st is coming Tuesday, 7 to 9 p.m. It's going to be at Holy Family Catholic Church in St. Louis Park, but you do need to register to attend. Call our office, 651-771-1500, or go to our website, plam.org, go to the events page, and you can find the training there and be able to sign up from there, get the info. So please do that. And then lastly, on your calendar for this calendar year of 2025, our very last thing we've got scheduled, or something may come up, but the last thing that's on the schedule is Caroling for Life. That'll be Saturday, December 13th, and we will be at the Mega Planned Parenthood in the morning, and we'll be at two other locations simultaneous. We'll get that information out here probably in the next couple weeks as to what those other locations are, but put it on your calendar. Set that aside and be prepared to come and sing Christmas carols and watch babies' lives get saved. So a fun thing to do. Fun thing to do. And I have a developing story. And Angela, as I mentioned just before we went on the air here, that this wasn't in the list of things we talked about ahead of time because it is a very developing story. So I'm just sitting back, taking this in
for our listeners. Like, I have no idea what Brian is about to say.
you're getting it fresh along with the listeners. So this is a story out of Toronto, Canada. I'm on a business social media thing called LinkedIn, and this person messaged me through that, and she's telling me that the Catholic priest who is responsible for the Catholic schools in the Greater Toronto area was at a high school mass, and during that mass, this is a Catholic high school, during that mass, he talked about abortion. And he now, the school board for the Catholic schools is telling him he's not allowed to come into the schools.
Dear insanity.
Now that's what I've been told. The letter that was sent out is in French, so I had to tell the woman, you got to send it to me in English. if it were in Spanish, I might be able to figure some of it out, but in French, I can't at all. So I'm waiting for that. And then, and again, and she said that parents have been petitioning the bishop already. I was giving some ideas on what they can do. I don't know exactly what this priest said. I'm hoping to get a copy of either an audio or written what it is he said during his homily that has got the school board up and up saying such silly things, I think, possibly, and so forth. And of course, I would like to see what the letter is that the school board sent out so I can understand that. So it's a developing story, and as I learn more, we'll tell you more. But it's just shocking on the front end. If all this is true, mm-hmm. as it's been stated to me, that is shocking. And again, it's a sign of the dire need within our Catholic school systems for people of good faith to be in very responsible positions for those schools.
Yep.
We can't assume because somebody is Catholic, even attend Mass every week for that matter, that they really understand Catholic teaching in so many areas. And so we need to be very, very discerning who we're working with.
Yeah. Well, and we have a lot of non-Catholics. I mean, even people who, so that's another issue. You know, it's hard because a lot of these Catholic schools are understaffed. It's hard to find people to fill these positions. And at the same time, it's a, it's like a tremendous chink in the armor, so to speak, when yeah. you have people who are not aligned theologically or philosophically. They don't understand what the church teaches, or they don't respect what the church teaches. It's not, you know, it's coming in from all sides. It's, I think, this battle, and this is the most important battle right now. We're shaping and forming these young minds. These are the next yeah. this is the next generation of right. of citizens, of people who are changing the world.
But here's my first advice to them after saying, get in contact with the bishop. Keep trying to communicate with the bishop. Don't be harsh on him. Just get a hold of him. Get a mm-hmm. conversation going with the bishop, because he's got the authority to deal with this. So, you yeah. know, talk to him. Talk to him as best you can. But I said, but you parents that are upset about this, you need to band together and start teaching your children yourselves about the faith.
Oh, absolutely. You
know, and
that, what does the catechism
is,
teach? Catechism teaches is, that parents exactly. are primary educators of their children.
Yep. Exactly. And especially when it comes to faith and morals. We are yep. the ones that are, it's our responsibility to teach our children the faith, not Catholic school teachers. Now, we pass that on to Catholic to school teachers that aid us in teaching the faith, but when they're not, or when they're failing at it, it's all on us. We need to be the ones that take responsibility for our own children. And we have that moral, spiritual authority over our own children. And so we have to take that and teach them. So,
well, this has been a long issue in the church. I think it's largely to blame for why we are in the state that we're in right now with regards to catechesis, is because we've gotten very comfortable relegating our duties as parents to other institutions, including catechesis. And that's why it's kind of a joke, like, oh, I went to Catholic school for 12 years and I left the church. Well, yeah, because you weren't catechized. But a lot of that is because it wasn't reinforced at home. There wasn't a lived experience of the church at home. I'm not saying that that's always the case, but a lot of the time it is.
Sometimes, just like we're seeing with the issue that is potentially here with this school system in Toronto, is that sometimes those Catholic schools were not necessarily teaching right. things as they should have been.
100%. Yeah.
So, you know, and we've got famous politicians that stand on their, I went through Catholic school all the way through 12th grade and then a Catholic university or college.
Yeah.
And I'm pro-abortion. It's yep. fine. You know, so we see that all the time, as well as those that leave. So, yeah, it's our responsibilities and grandparents.
Yes.
It's your responsibility to make sure the parents of your grandchildren are doing it. And if they're not, you need to take your authority and supersede your children. I have fun doing that with my grandkids anyhow, not necessarily in faith and morals, though at times I need to do that, but more likely in just fun stuff to do. You know, how can mom and dad tell me what I can do and what I can't do with my own grandchildren when they're at my house, right? So teach them the truth, teach them to pray, everything. So take them to Mass. It's always the best thing you can do as a grandparent as well.
Yeah. So. Taking those babies to Mass for sure.
Well, Pope Leo visited the Italian president, Sergio Mattarella, at Rome's Quirinal Palace, and he took the opportunity to talk about the dire situation with the decline in birth rates in Europe in particular. It's happening in many places around the world, but in Europe, it is very, very serious. They've been in Italy. Their birth rate is 1.18 children per woman, which is below, and 2.1 is what is necessary just to keep for equal population replacement.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a very dire situation.
Well, Brian, I have been reliably informed for the last couple of decades that we have an overpopulation problem.
Yeah, I'm sure you have been. I've been hearing that since, what was the guy that came up with the book,
back
the
in population the 70s, bomb?
Back in, well, yeah. I think it was even in the 60s we started hearing that baloney.
Yep.
Yeah, and actually the predictions were when that stuff came out was that by the time we got to 1 or 2 billion people on Earth, it would be catastrophic. And of course, we blew past those numbers long ago. Mm-hmm. And there doesn't seem to be any problems still. The problem is now the opposite, the demographic winter that we're talking about, because as populations now start to decline, especially in the Western world, when we see the decline happen, we got to shutter our schools, we got to close churches, we don't have people coming, you know, for those reasons alone, let alone the lack of faith that's out there. Then you add manufacturing and economy issues. It's going to be very detrimental. You've got an aging population because we're all living longer.
Yep. And I was going to say, and this feeds right into this assisted suicide, quote unquote, but euthanasia, this push for euthanasia, because you don't have enough young people in the medical field to help take care of the aging population, because the aging population far exceeds this younger population. And so it's not at all surprising that there's this huge push for euthanasia because it's more, quote unquote, cost effective. And you know, that's just, we've commodified people in such a way. Yeah. And so, yeah, this is the state that we're in. And I'm glad that Pope Leo is condemning this and speaking out publicly against it.
Yeah. And just one of those little asides going along what we were just saying, Angela, Canada has euthanized about 90,000 people since they've made it legal in that country.
Lord have mercy.
There's a number, 90,000 so-called medical aid in dying, as they call it, the MAID stuff, but it's a type of euthanasia, and it's clear. So, well, there's a woman out of Louisiana. Her name is Rosalie Markovich, and she is a plaintiff in a lawsuit that is filed earlier this month against the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. So she, in the lawsuit, she's claiming that her boyfriend received a mail order abortion pill regimen for her and then coerced her into taking it because he did not want her to have a baby. She says that her boyfriend snapped. She was afraid of him. And so she gave in to his demand to take the drug. She had the plan to vomit it up immediately after, but was unable to do so. So now she's grieving the loss of her baby. And she's suing the FDA for the lack of the REMS that used to be in place going back to 2000. So this mail order stuff is what's really being gone after in this lawsuit. Now there's some things in here that are being claimed that are just not, you know, one of the claims she makes is that had she had to do an in-person abortion pill visit, she would have been able to tell the doctor she didn't want to do this and that she was being coerced, and she would have gotten the support she needed not to have the abortion. I don't know that that's true.
that
she would have gotten support, but
that doesn't comport with what we have heard women say going in and out of the clinic. I mean,
there's a possibility she might have been.
It would be like a 1 in 100 doctors working in these clinics.
Abortionists.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, or even nursing staff or whatever. I remember when I was working for Students for Life, going to, I think I was at South Dakota State and doing their Planned Parenthood project display. We had way back in the day, all these hot pink banners, and people thought we were Planned Parenthood and would approach us. And then we'd engage in conversations like, do you know what Planned Parenthood does? Most people would say, well, they help Planned Parenthood, right? And I remember this one woman came up to me. She was very young, and she marched over, and I was like, oh boy, what's coming? And she stops, and after engaging her a couple minutes, she said, oh, I thought you were Planned Parenthood. And I said, no, we're here to talk about abortion and that, and tell people that Planned Parenthood is the nation's largest abortion provider, because most people at the time did not know Planned Parenthood was still keeping that under wraps fairly well. And she shared with me this story about how she went to Planned Parenthood because she had a positive pregnancy test. And she and her husband were over the moon excited because she had fertility issues and she didn't think that she'd ever be able to get pregnant. And at the time, she didn't have health insurance. So she went there to confirm her pregnancy. And then they tried to coerce her into an abortion, even when she explicitly told them how excited they were about this pregnancy. They couldn't believe how excited, or they couldn't believe that they had finally conceived a child. And basically, they handed her 3 pamphlets on abortion, one on placing for adoption, and said, well, we can't help you here, but if you change your mind, we'll be here for you. And they sent her on her way. That was it.
Yeah, that's about what it is. Yeah. And we see that all too often. But yeah. Well, and you know, this past week we talked about what came out of the blue, because we had not heard it was even in the pipeline, but the FDA approved a generic abortion pill manufactured by another company. And of course, we reported last week that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. was saying, well, legally, he was bound to do it because this whole process was started before this current Trump administration and before they came into the positions they're in. But then also said, hey, we're still going to do a full review, safety review of this stuff. Eh, hold on tight. It may not be, but we'll see as that follows. But we now know who the maker, the manufacturer of this generic abortion pill is. It's called Avita Solutions, LLC. And they are doing this, I believe, out of Virginia, the state of Virginia. Little is known about this company. We know who the principal person is. The name is Robert Patain. And we also know that Avita Solution only manufactures one drug, the abortion pill. Yeah. So,
yeah, very interesting.
Yeah, very, very interesting stuff. So the man who attempted to kill Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh after the overturning of Roe v. Wade was announced prematurely to the actual Dobbs decision, he pled guilty. He finally ended up pleading guilty. Originally, he wasn't going to plead guilty. He was going to fight this thing. He was trying to get a plea agreement with the prosecutors, and they couldn't come to the plea agreement he wanted. So he finally just gave up, and he pled guilty. And so he was sentenced by a federal judge to 8 years in prison. Now, a life sentence is normal for this type of thing.
Yeah. Yes.
Now, whether it should be a full life sentence or not, I can understand that there might be reason not to give him, you know, a young man in his 20s, you know, the rest of his life in prison, maybe 40 years, 20 years, you know, maybe something substantial beyond eight years. So now the Department of Justice is appealing the sentence because it was so woefully insufficient, as they say. So we'll see what happens with that. Here's a good one for you. So we talk about the number of abortions taking place since the overturning of Roe v. Wade, and there's a lot of numbers that are thrown out there, and they're all just guesstimates. Nothing solid is out there on the federal side across the United States. So we have to look at individual states that do get decent reporting to see what's going on in some cases with abortion. And in this case is a very interesting one. This is Oregon.
A very pro-abortion state. I mean,
right. And
that's why this is,
this
really
is a state drawing women from pro-life states like Idaho to come and have their abortions in Oregon. And yet their abortion numbers have dropped in 2024 over 2023. It's not a big significant number. It's 215, but it's still fewer. So that, I think, is a significant thing that there are fewer when, again, all the hype out there in the media and among the pro-abortion politicians is this is all great, come to our state, all that stuff like that, we even hear in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most interesting things, though, is that after the Dobbs decision, in a county in eastern Oregon, Planned Parenthood set up a place in a town of Ontario, just about 60 miles west of Boise, Idaho. Idaho's very pro-life in their laws. And so they set up there, and they had 876 abortions in that location, and I think 779 of them were out-of-state residents. Prior to 2023, before this Planned Parenthood was open, the county had zero annual abortions. So right there is a huge number. Again, very interesting. Texas, we've already talked about how there was this ring that was doing illegal abortions in Texas. They weren't even medically licensed as doctors or nurses or anything. They're just operating this abortion facility, or several of them. Well, the lead of the ring, Maria Rojas, was arrested back in March and is facing 15 felony charges. But they've arrested a total of 8 people now in this ring. And I think it's really interesting to hear, this is a quote from the Attorney General Paxton of Texas. He says, "Beyond being illegal, it's evil. These dens of fake doctors will not be allowed to operate in Texas. Those responsible will be held accountable. I will always protect innocent life and use every tool to enforce Texas pro-life laws."
So nice to hear a governor say something like that.
Well, the Attorney General.
Attorney General, excuse me. Yeah. Yes.
That would be wonderful to hear in our state.
Wouldn't it?
Attorney General someday, yeah. So, other good news is, so Texas shuts down the abortion industry in the state of Texas, and they move to other states, and the big move has been to New Mexico. And we're working with pro-lifers in New Mexico all the time, sidewalk counselors and so forth, offering what help we can give and so forth. Well, the governor of New Mexico, very pro-abortion woman, Michelle Grisham, and she pushed for a new taxpayer-funded abortion facility. Get this. We're not talking about trying to pay for travel for abortions. The state of New Mexico is building Planned Parenthood, a mega complex, as they call it. That's in quotes. A late-term abortion center. Now, here's the vision. It's not getting built. Contractors in that area are refusing to even put bids in.
That's amazing.
The boycott is
a boycott. Oh, I love that.
And the pro-lifers are working hard for this to happen. Believe me, the pro-lifers are working very hard on the sidewalk and at a grassroots level. But they can't even get somebody to deliver concrete.
That's amazing. This is such a great way to, like, this is a grassroots effort. And this is like the power of, sometimes it's awesome to do things on a federal level. Legislation is really important, that kind of stuff. But this is how you get stuff done to do stuff for us. If you're going and you're working with contractors, you are persuading them to not participate. It's so cool. It's just, it's really cool. I love
it. And to me, it's doubly and triply cool. If you're one, when Planned Parenthood went to build their mega complex here in St. Paul, we knew about it at the time, and we started going to the contractors, and we were trying to get them to do exactly what these guys are doing, where they would refuse to do it. Now, we ended up with one contractor who walked off the job and quit doing it. We had another couple of individual construction workers who walked off the job and faced the possible consequence of losing their jobs because they did that. So we did have some minor success in the process. We also ran into three contractors whose companies are owned by Catholics,
mm.
who had no qualms about taking the money to build this makeup Planned Parenthood. So it was very, very difficult to watch that happen. We even got priests and bishops involved as best we could to try and contact these individuals and have them not do the work they were doing, and yet they still went forward with it. So awful. Very, very hard to watch.
You know, but what I do like about this is I think it signals a shift, you know, where in the past, maybe in the last 10 years or so, it would have been very advantageous from a in the public sphere, it would have been socially advantageous for these companies to align themselves with Planned Parenthood. And it's not cool anymore. Like, it's not actually, people are turning. The people are turning away from the abortion industry and transgenderism. Like, it's on the outs. I really believe that.
Well, starting to be.
Yes.
I
think public perception, especially among young people, they do not want to be engaged with this type of stuff. I mean, I'm even seeing numbers of these younger generations identifying as, you know, transgender or whatever. These numbers are plummeting right now. Of kids with their weird sexual orientations. And so I think we're seeing a lot of good shifts here. And so that's another reason I love to see this.
It is very exciting to see it. And of course, it's something that, you know, when we run into this issue here in Minnesota or other places, we can all look to this and say, we can do the same thing. We can all do the same thing. So yeah, I love it. It's very encouraging. In Virginia, there's a big governor's race this year, and it's very, very tight. The pro-abortion candidate is Abigail Spanberger. She thinks that abortions should be a right. The killing a baby should be a right, a requirement, basically, of the government. Whereas her opponent, her name is Winsome Sears, is pro-life. Okay, and so now polling is being showed. Trafalgar Group has just come out with polling on this, and it's statistically a dead heat, which is very good to see, because Winsome was coming from way behind. So she's caught up with Spanberger, and it could be a very, very significant thing. I believe in Virginia, they actually vote separately for their lieutenant governors. In this case, the Republican nominee is ahead of the Democrat nominee, but again, it's a statistical dead heat. And then in their attorney general seat, the incumbent Republican is well ahead of the Democrat challenger at this point in time. Now, I only identified their parties because that's who they belong to. If we were talking about, I'd be delighted to see pro-life Democrats winning as much as I would like to see pro-life Republicans win. I want to see pro-life people win. That's it. So just to make that clear as well. A London man is currently on trial on charges of fatally stabbing his pregnant girlfriend because she refused to abort their preborn child. He went nuts, stabbed her 19 times. She was screaming that she was being stabbed, and he ended up killing her. He told her that. Told the police that he had killed her. He's on trial now. Very, very important that he is on trial, that's for sure. Two more women injured at a Denver Planned Parenthood, taken away by ambulance. We see those in St. Paul as well, but two more in this Denver one. And this is dangerous for the woman, not just for the baby. The baby is being killed. It's absolutely dangerous for the baby, but so often abortion is dangerous for the woman. The claim being that this is all for women is not true. It's all for money. Let's not get that wrong. And so, terrible, terrible stuff out there, but some good stuff as well. We're happy to see that. It's all the time we have today. Thank you for listening, and God bless you.